Oh, get your Kirkland luggage. Get your Kirkland roller. Oh, wait, where is it? Oh.
So what is happening right now is Wally and Jeff are taping a microphone to a camera stand because, and there's two guys doing this, by the way, because for some reason this needs two dudes and some tape.
I think this is what sound engineers do. I think this is the definition of sound engineering.
No, this is not what they do.
Pretty sure.
China MSG. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of China MSG. I'm David Tan. I had an amazing week. I hope you guys did too. Today we're going to talk about two topics. Our first topic today is going to be a little Shanghainese restaurant called Xiao Fan Guan. More information within the podcast. And the second topic is going to be about managing expectations. Now, this week we had about a 2.5 hour conversation, so we had to edit it down to about 60 minutes. I'll be in and out to tell you what's going on, where we're going with all this, and enjoy.
I'm over here with my legs up on a counter drinking a Heineken.
In front of a
raspberry dog baggy tote thing.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's nice.
I don't know what the fuck's
going on. What do you need that for?
That's for my cat.
Why?
I need to take my cat places sometimes.
Where are you going to take your cat?
Well, to the vet, maybe.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then I put the cat in a bag. Well, before, I had a box, and I put it in the box, and then it didn't have breathe holes, and it wasn't happy about this.
Yeah,
<he's> serious? No, it wasn't happy.
Look at this guy and his cat. This guy, I mean, Quagmire incarnate, right?
That's true.
Giggity. We took a week off last week, but we did go out for dinner. We started. Where did I can't remember where we went.
Shanghainese.
Ah, yes.
Xiao Fan Guan.
Okay.
Where is this?
Let's double check.
We should get Lao Ximen.
Okay, so it's on Lao Ximen. It's on Xizang Nanlu.
Was decent.
No, actually, it wasn't. My first impression was actually that's what we're talking about. Like one thing that stemmed from our eating there the other day was that we were talking about managing expectations, and how that my expectations of this place and the way that it was set up was totally different. Now, and actually, when we're talking about managing expectations, there's two ways we can think about this. One is a customer business relationship where you have to manage what they think they should get or will get from your venue or your restaurant or whatever you have or your product. And the other one is you're managing your own expectations. Because when somebody says Shanghainese food to me and I walked into this place, I was pissed off because it wasn't what I expected. But then it turned out that...
Dude, you were pissed off before you even walked in there. Before you were within like...
Look, I wanted Wagas.
You were pissed off.
I wanted Wagas. And nobody wanted Wagas. And, you know, you guys were being dicks. So, you know, instead I had Hong Xiao Rou. When I wanted tuna pesto penne. But anyway, with that, we walk in this place. It's off of Lao Ximen. I mean, it's probably about a 5-minute walk from the subway stop, right on the street. Very kind of Portlandy stylish front door, no porch, no patio, a little awning over the front. You walk in, there's all kinds of Japanimation, like characters, Dragon Ball, Gundam, things like that all over, like the little toys and everything, and like little knickknacks from like American. You know, Americana, like weird shit on the walls and everything, and you know, and then everybody's wearing these Japanese branded shirts, hoodies, and you know, I had no clue where I was at, and I thought I was gonna get Shanghai food, and everybody is all Japanese and an American diet. I was like, well, this is crazy.
Yeah, I didn't have like any, you know, special kitsch Shanghai vibe to it. So I guess the Shanghai is all in the food. Which it kind of goes back to what we were talking about managing expectations. You know, what do they call Shanghai's food in Shanghai?
They call it food.
Food. So, with or without any special decor, it is Shanghai food. And it's definitely a fusion style. It had some fusion style to it, so.
It's really small, and like there's like alcohol bottles in the window. So, but that's why I think I wanted to take you there is because I was like, look, I went there before, and I was like, wow, this is really cool how... How different it doesn't try to play off of like, oh, let's be Shanghainese. What's Shanghainese? What, they're gonna have like pearl towers everywhere and dishes made out of, you know, I don't know.
That's what I wanted.
like a miniature Huangpu flowing through the middle of the restaurant. You know, what's what are we doing?
Well, I wasn't expecting all the Japanese wear everywhere.
That's true, but I mean, I think it's just it's a guy who lives in Shanghai and the chef, who's the chef, and he's just kind of like, okay, I'm gonna make a restaurant and cook my
food. Though I'm a big Dragon Ball fan, I love Dragon Ball.
Nah, he loves Dragon Ball, but I'm just saying he just like I'm gonna cook food and I'm just gonna throw my stuff all over the place.
So you got you talk about the ambiance, basically. It was unique. It was original. When I walked in, my first reference was I felt like I was in a little kitsch cafe in Portland, Oregon. Cozy, warm, wooden tables, wooden seats, like nice high bar, high table that can seat family style down the middle.
So like yeah. The ambiance was concrete, wood.
Had some like what some pinup girl type of 1940s kind of metal plaque. Yeah. Poster kind of things hanging and with the
I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. And the fact that they had just good food, I thought that was even better. I thought the food was good.
I'm not a Shanghainese food fan, but they did do a good job.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not...
except, wait, let's talk about the really... Water wasn't cold. Beer wasn't cold.
Okay, yeah. True. Let's go for the throat with this one right away. This, only thing about this restaurant... They don't know what temperature is.
That's true.
They don't know temperatures. They know flavor. They know taste. They know original. They don't know temperature.
Did you get a can of Coke? Somebody got a can of Coke.
I got a can of Coke.
Or you tried to. I think you didn't take it in the end because it was warm.
No. Did I?
Yeah, I think you did. They're like, can you make it cold? And they went back. And
yeah, they put it under the water, tap. I think. Yeah. I think they put it under the tap and it came out to the cold to the touch, but it wasn't cold inside.
At all. And it's not like they put it like for like 20 minutes in an ice bucket. They literally just went behind the bar, ran it under a tap, and brought it back to you.
Yep. Chabudo.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, okay, that was just wet. Yeah. Now there's water
cold
all over the table.
Cold drinks were not cold. Hot tea was not hot.
Beer was not cold.
Which is kind of surprising because it came out of the Asahi tap.
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe that's not their fault, but still, you know, we have to check.
Yeah, because you know, I work with Asahi quite a bit, you know. They always supply their own tap. It goes through their own little refrigeration system.
Sure.
It comes out cold every time, and this time it didn't come out cold, and I was surprised.
Yeah, maybe like I said, maybe it broke down a little bit.
It could be this Chinese kind of thing, like, oh, it's winter, but I have cold shit.
I don't think so. No one ever goes to like a
bar
and say
cold
like,
beer.
Yeah, no, but even if they want a warmer drink, no one says, hey guys, could you make your beer warmer? That'd be nice. I think no. But that's the thing. I think it goes back to the point. Yeah, manage expectations, sure, but whose expectations are you managing? You know, you can't just manage everyone's expectations. If you're like, it's like if we were in New York and went to a burger place and it's like, why is there not like American flags everywhere? I thought this was a U.S. American, you know. It's not Americana enough.
You find anywhere in the States without a USA flag there. That's true. And that's a weird thing about the States, you know. You walk down any street or people's houses, they have the flag like waving around and shit.
Yeah,
I never went anywhere like that. It's fucking crazy, honestly.
You haven't spent time in Oregon.
Wait. What are you talking about?
U.S. flags just randomly everywhere on people's houses in the States.
Yeah, if you go back, you're kind of weird. You're like, yeah, I know where I am.
You go down the streets and there's flags everywhere. You go to people's houses, they have a flag outside.
Yeah, it's like imagine if you're here and you go to a person's house and you see like a Chinese flag hanging outside. You're like, these people
just
are crazy.
Just imagine going down Huaihailu and every light pole has a China flag.
Well, they do that during like October holiday and stuff like that.
Oh, come on, that's a holiday, man.
No, but I'm just saying, imagine here, you're going to...
Well, 4th of July is the same in the States. Okay, I get it. But it's not like you just at somebody's house and they're just like,
yep.
You know, I'm American, flag.
Yep.
Like, I'm Chinese, and like there's flags everywhere, and you know they have Chinese flag bumper stickers. And
I mean, some people do, but that's what I'm saying. If you go to someone's house, imagine you go to someone's house right now. We walk in and there's a big Chinese flag hanging outside. We're like, oh, these people are crazy.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with these people.
A little intense.
We're gonna get into an argument for sure. For sure, the first question is, when you walk in is, hi, welcome to my home. What do you think about Tibet?
Yeah, right.
Who does Taiwan belong to? That's for sure the first question when you walk through that door.
You know, I mean, the States varies too. I mean, depends on where you are. If you're on the left coast cities, if you're in San Francisco or Portland, you're not going to see much of that.
The left coast?
The left coast, man. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I just think it's a weird phenomenon.
Yeah. No, I mean, you still get it. I'm saying, like, if I see a car driving around, like a moped driving around with Chinese flags everywhere, I'm like, oh, stay out of his way. Because he's probably looking for an argument or a fight.
Right? Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, so, but same thing back, you know, back in the States. If you go to places decked out with Chinese flags, you know.
Well, I'm probably going to have dinner there. That's why.
That's right.
That's probably right. Chinese flag? Oh, but shit.
If you bring your friends from China,
General
you know.
General Tso's chicken?
If you bring some friends from China, you know, they might encounter some awkward conversations too, you know.
No. Here's the equivalent of crazy. Look, for some reason, it's normal in the United States to have the American flag, but then you have the Confederate flag in some places.
Yeah, I never seen that. I was never in those. I've seen some. I think in Oregon.
Sure in Oregon.
I remember asking my stepfather. I was like, "Isn't the Oregon technically in the north?"
Yep. Technically.
I just moved to the States, and I was like,
physically, mentally,
no, but I mean, just it's
outside of Portland.
It's geographically doesn't make sense at all. It's like me throwing up like. I don't know.
Oregon wasn't even around at that time, I don't think.
Was it?
Think about it.
Somebody knew it was there, I guess.
Who flies a Confederate flag these days? It's a mentality.
That's true.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, no, if you're a redneck in Canada, you're not going to fly a Confederate flag just because it doesn't apply to you. And there's plenty of rednecks in Canada. I could probably.
But I'm going back to what you said. If you see the guy with the Chinese flag on his moped, and you see the guy with the Confederate flag on his truck, same guy. Not talking to him because there's going to be something to...
Yeah, it's like, oh, don't want to do argument with this. Here, yep. Maybe a fight. Probably should not start arguing with these people. I see a guy riding around with, like, decked out in Chinese flags. I'm like, oh, it seems nice, but I know what the first question is going to be, so... Yeah. So Shanghainese food is what? Benbang Cai, right? That's what it's called, which is a weird name. It's not Shanghai Cai, it's Benbang Cai, which... Why is it called that? Like...
Dude, I don't know.
Help yourself some food?
I don't know, man.
Locally helped food? I don't know. Okay.
I don't know, man.
Somebody's probably screaming when they're listening to this. This is what it means, you idiot.
Probably. If anyone knows, fill us in,
yeah. The restaurants I've been to around Shanghai, and the good places, like on, what's that road where Masse is on?
Masse is on that
Jinxianlu. Road. Jinxianlu, right?
Is it?
I think it's Jinxianlu.
Maoming and something. Jinxian and Maoming.
So there's a couple of there's like three restaurants over there that are super famous. Anthony Bourdain just went to one. There's three, and he went to one of these.
Well, there's the Shanghai food restaurant. There's two of them right next to each other.
There's three.
Oh, there's three.
And they're all Chinese.
Well, I don't know. I go to one always, and you always see always outside. There's this one. There's always like a Lamborghini or a Maserati.
Yep.
And this place is a shithole. Yep. I mean, honestly, it's cold in the winter. It's hot in the summer. The chairs are like, you know, you're just sitting on a dungza.
Yeah, imagine a wooden chair from like, you know, primary school, like in the 70s. You know, just completely uncomfortable.
And if you have more than three people at your table, you're sitting on a plastic dungza or something.
Yeah, plastic stool.
Yes, and then there's...
Yeah. And there's always a line outside.
Standing room only.
So if people don't know what Shanghai food is, that's different than other Chinese food.
To be honest, I don't know what Shanghai food is either. I don't like the taste. I never cared to even learn about it. It's not like Xinjiang food or, you know, Dongbei Cai or Xiang Cai or Chuan Cai. I like all that stuff, you know, the Sichuan food or Hubei food or stuff like that. But like Shanghai food, I just don't have a taste for it.
Well, okay. So the typical thing that everyone says, it's very sweet. It's that caramelized flavor of, was it soy sauce? Not oyster, some kind of seafood sauce. And a lot of sugar. So that's braising. That's kind of the typical.
So things like what? Hongxiao Rou is like?
Hongxiao Rou, which is like
super fatty
pork.
Three-layer pork thing.
Yeah, it's just layers of fat over meat, which is delicious with the sauce. It's a lot of really sweet delicious. Dishes.
Oh, anyway, we were talking about that Rou. The Rou has three places, little shit places. But like I said, it was really famous and famous places. And like you always see like a Maserati, a Lamborghini, a Ferrari. Yeah. Plus you have mom and pops there.
Yeah.
And that Rou actually has like a bar that we... frequented a lot.
Yeah,
Masse.
Yeah.
We play Golden Tea over there, and now they have Kung Fu Comedy Club. And
never been there.
No, I mean neither. Yeah. But I should go.
Osteria's on that road.
Yes, exactly.
And this is not the same road as the restaurant we ate at. Right?
No.
It's a different Shanghainese food place, but this road is actually pretty famous.
So
around the corner is the what is it? Dishui Dong.
Dishui Dong is right around there as well. So. Dishui Dong. The long road that I was taking is those restaurants in themselves also do not have, you know, pearl towers or whatever in their decoration. It's just, it's this lady's house or man's or the family's house, and they cook food and they turn it into a restaurant.
Right.
In the cheapest possible way possible. So there's really no decor.
I bet you they have no licenses or anything.
I'm sure they do now.
You think so?
I think they have to. Unless they know somebody, I don't know, but man. They have to.
What I just found out today is like all Yongkang Lu, they all don't have licenses too.
I think they have one license that they all share.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How the fuck is that even possible? There's like thousands of people on that road in the summer.
Yeah,
like,
so the road
one license?
The road he's talking about, Yongkang Road, it's like a now a popular, especially during the summer, like a foreign street where they have all these bars and restaurants. They're really small, super, super tiny, and they technically have to close at 10, and it's this old neighborhood, and it's super popular in the summer.
Well, yeah, there's little bars outside, you know, hanging out, and like, you know, some of them are really... really do a really good job.
Yeah,
like the beer place we went to the other day,
the place was called the Tap House. Back to my original point, you walk in those little Shanghainese restaurants, you sit down, if I didn't tell you anything, you wouldn't know what kind of food there was. You probably guess it's Chinese food because it's in a Chinese house, but that's it. So the restaurant we went at, managing expectations. It was a long road. I know it was a long road, but
we're back at managing expectations now.
Yes, we are.
Wow, how do we do this? Okay, I need a chart or something, guys.
Just saying. You guys don't have earphones? It's super
I'm bringing
nice.
Mine next week. I have my B&Ws.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm dropping names now.
B&Os? You getting B&Os?
No, fuck a B&O. I got my C5s and my P5s, and I want to get the P7s. But you know.
Are those the ones that broke all the time and you think they're fake?
You know, I thought they were fake to begin with. But no, they're actually pretty good.
I'm going to stop trusting your technology.
The sound is great. They got cheap and they fucked up the cord, so it's a thin ass piece of shit cord that you can't put in your pocket or if it breaks.
Oh, that
and I actually for $400 for a pair of fucking headphones. If anybody's listening from that fucking company, please come find me so I can punch you in the face.
Yeah, you're a little bitter about that, but that sucks. Yeah, that sucks. You're buying like
$400 in China for those fucking headphones. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Hey man, that's about managing expectations. You know what? This is something that luxury goods companies do implicitly. If you work in luxury goods, you will learn who the luxury market is geared towards. And it's geared for people who can buy $400 earphones and then break them and buy them again and then break them and buy them again and break them and buy them again. The same way that your average person might expect to break and buy $8 headphones.
That's me.
And buy them again and again. And that's one thing that you'll find some people fall into that trap in the luxury market when they, you know, it's the person who buys designer gear every season who's not going to complain when their stuff rips or breaks or tears, but it's the person who saved their paycheck or two paychecks or three paychecks so they could come buy that one handbag or that one wallet or that one piece of headphones, who have a certain expectation when they spend that much money on something that it's going to last. I can tell you if you think that, if you're not familiar with the luxury market, it does not mean that, you know? And one of
that's
the best...
That's a really good point.
It's a great... It's something that I learned.
I mean, because everybody... Business. I guess everybody's victim of the same as, like, controlled obsolescence or, you know, that people want you to purchase. People want it. You know, they don't want it to last. But is it the same way with bags and shit like that?
So I'm curious. I mean, that's you know, the argument's like, well, I want to pay for quality. And I was like, I understand that. But so that you're saying there is no quality? That's a myth?
Okay. The quality is a different type of quality than you may be thinking. Quality and durability are two different things. Okay, so here's the way that someone explained to me in a very clear way, and I think everyone can get this, okay? Let's say you go to buy a wine glass, okay? You can buy an acrylic wine glass or you can buy a crystal wine glass, okay? A crystal wine glass is made of fine crystal. It has a nice resonance when you know, hit it. It has a beautiful look and it glows with light and it's a luxury wine glass. If you drop that, it's for sure going to shatter and break. An acrylic wine glass is going to last you a lifetime and it's half or a fraction of the price of a crystal wine glass. So the quality of a crystal wine glass is still a higher quality than an acrylic wine glass, but it does not make it more durable.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
That's actually, how you have to think about luxury about goods. If it's luxury watches, luxury handbags, luxury items, electronics. So
doesn't mean they're more durable.
Doesn't mean it's more durable. And it's like, for example, if you're buying luxury shoes, for example. Okay, what does that mean? People think that luxury shoes are going to last them a lifetime because they spent $500, $1,000, $2,000 for a pair of shoes. What are $2,000 shoes meant for? It means you get in your car. Are you driving? No, your driver's driving you. To where? To get out, to step on the red carpet so you can walk on carpet and walk back and get in back in the back seat of your car. So you got to think about what are $2,000 shoes designed for. They're true. Not designed for what a $100 pair of sneakers are designed for.
I don't know. Like my friend, him, he has his Rolex and his Hublot and all the and his AP and all that shit. And you know what he always complains about? They always break.
Yep. Really?
They always break.
Seriously?
Yeah. Wow. He took his Hublot in twice for repairs.
Of course, because it's going to be meant for people who can't afford to repair it.
Is it expensive to repair like a watch like that?
I'm not too sure, but it's, you know, $20,000 just to purchase the entry level.
Yeah, Jesus. Those are very complicated machines. I mean, if you buy a quartz watch, probably going to last you much longer without a repair. When you are in China, you see so many fake luxury goods.
Counterfeit, not fake.
Counterfeit luxury goods that it changes your whole thought and mindset about these luxury items. It's kind of like, you know, I used to think it's kind of either you buy real shit or you buy counterfeit stuff. But, you know, I guarantee there's a lot of people here who own some real stuff and some fake stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, you take a grab bag, you know, kind of mix and match.
I think the best thing of having counterfeit items in the market makes me realize how such a facade a brand is, you know? Yes, you can see the difference between quality sometimes, and sometimes you can't, though. If you go for a super counterfeited Rolex watch like one of my colleagues has, but they look great. They have the same weight. They have the same feel. They lasted for years already. Maybe even lasted longer than a real Rolex would. But, I mean, and he has all of them. And, you know, honestly, it's like he paid, you know, $300 for it. And why would you even think about paying $10,000 for the brand even though you bought it from the real store?
Sure. Every luxury brand will tell you a brand is about the storyline. It's about the romance of the story that's behind it, you know?
It's the storyline. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. However, it's kind of weird. Okay, I have this thing. It's like I don't wear branded clothes. I have nothing branded. Nothing. But the I do wear is I wear things that I believe in. Like if I have like right now I'm wearing a Great Lakes Brewery t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And I usually wear my NASA t-shirt or my Star Trek t-shirt or whatever I'm going to wear. And you know what? It's weird because I get more comments about what I'm wearing when I wear a NASA t-shirt than if I was wearing a Louis Vuitton or if I was wearing something branded. Because it's like everybody's always like, oh, you're wearing NASA, or you're a dork, or it's like something weird or whatever. It's like, but why?
So why do people wear luxury? Why do people wear a Rolex?
I don't know, but nobody comments. Like, what I'm trying to say is like it's like it's interesting when I wear like a different shirt when I have something that says like Cleveland on the back or Hawaii on the back or, you know, all the other places I might have lived in, or if I had NASA or Star Trek. You know, Star Trek gives me more comments than everything else. But if I was wearing a Rolex, it would be like more of a not a. You're wearing a tap out shirt right now.
This is a gift, by the way. Thank you.
He trying to save himself? He's like, I don't wear that.
who was the gift from?
So from my friend Steve back in Hawaii. Thank Steve. You, Steve, keeping me warm here.
And why is Steve buying you sweatshirts? That's kind of weird, man.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
That's my boy. We trained together, man. So
That's cool, man.
Obviously, when you wear a tap out shirt, you're
getting underwear too.
You're an amazing fighter.
That's right.
Tapo shirt. You must be an amazing fighter.
Is that the tagline for it? In that voice? Especially in that voice. Tap out. You must be an amazing fighter.
People don't bring it up or mention it if you have luxury good stuff. And I kind of think that's the kind of vibe that luxury stuff pulls out in people. It's like, even if you're impressed or anti-impressed.
You got to be overly impressed.
You got to act like you've been there before. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course.
Oh, another Rolex? I didn't bring mine from my collection today, but yeah, sure, you wear yours if you want. I like to say a little DDL. But yeah, if you wear a Tapo shirt, NASA shirt, I mean, hey, it's like, it's not, I don't know, Tapo's kind of douchey, but.
Yeah, Tapo's super douchey.
Pretty douchey.
I'm not saying by the brand, hey, guys. Tapo guys, ever listen to this?
And you want to sponsor us?
I like your stuff. You want to sponsor us? I'm not going to say no. Love your stuff. Wear it all the time.
If a guy's wearing top out, he wants everyone to know what? That he likes to fight?
He's an amazing fighter.
He's an amazing fighter. That he likes to fight? That he's tough? That he's whatever, an athlete? I mean, not an athlete. Maybe someone who enjoys fighting it. But there is this kind of built-in context.
I think that is well put, and it goes back to why branding is still important and popular in our modern culture. I think it goes back to our primal roots of tribal insignias, you know? What tribe am I with? What is my social status? And who do I want to let know What is my status with luxury goods, for example? You know, there's this fine line. When it becomes too well known and too accessible, you know, then in the upper echelons, it becomes too commonplace. You know,
is it well known or accessible? Is it too accessible or too well known?
No.
Everybody knows Lamborghini. Everybody knows Rolex, but it doesn't mean everybody's buying them.
Well, they're not accessible. True. They're right. Exclusive, right? I mean,
they're exclusively priced.
You got to be exclusive.
Right. That's true.
And a lot more people got Rolex than they say Hublot. But you know, I would say Rolex is still more of a recognized, renowned brand for luxury than
exactly. And I don't know anything about watches, but let me ask you, what costs more, a Rolex or an Hublot?
Oh, they both can get fucking expensive, man.
But what costs more? Do you know?
Entry level Hublot.
Okay, would you say Hublot is more exclusive?
That's a good question. I don't know. Let me think about
this. This is kind of getting at the point I'm trying to make. For example, I think Hermes has become, you know, a more common name around the world recently. But if you go to Middle America, even a couple of years ago, ask people, you know, if they know what Hermes is, most people probably not. If you ask people if they know what Louis Vuitton is, I would say yes.
Right.
You know,
that's brand awareness.
Yes, but the brand awareness for Louis Vuitton several years back hit that apex point, that perfect sweet spot of accessible enough that they could be globally known on all different social strata, from the poorest to the richest, if you can get it or not. And they became accessible enough that, you know, you didn't have to be ultra ultra wealthy to own a small, you know, entry level Louis Vuitton piece, for example. But Hermes kept their entry level much higher, much more exclusive for much longer. And so as a result, you know, a few years back, it was, if you owned Hermes, only your friends in your exclusive class might recognize, oh, you have an Hermes. You know, the exclusive elite might appreciate an Hermes bag. When you walk by an average person on the street, you're wearing Hermes. They have no idea if it's Hermes or Guess or, you know, Levi's. You know, they don't know the difference between the brands. There's no special meaning to that. Past a certain point of exclusivity, you're only showing off to a very limited, very exclusive upper niche.
We all know plenty of people who are rich enough, they could buy whatever. Doesn't matter. Louis Vuitton, they could buy one every day. All their clothes, all underwear, socks could be Louis Vuitton. No problem. That's not even an issue, right? And then, but also at the same time, I know lots of people who buy a lot of it. Maybe they're not that, they're rich. They're well, they have a couple apartments, but they're not, you know, they're not hyper millionaires. But they do go to Europe and buy out, you know, everything. So it is still accessible to them. It is still accessible to them.
Right. So now, interesting, in the China market especially, Louis Vuitton is becoming too accessible to become exclusive. If you walk around Shanghai, you see a lot of Louis Vuitton.
But
around,
I mean, example. if you're a multimillionaire, none of them are exclusive, really, are they? I mean, you could get anything.
It's
you
want. It's not about what's exclusive to you. It's about what's exclusive among your tribe.
Sure.
You know, you want to own the most exclusive thing that your tribe will recognize.
But if you're hanging out with millionaires, I mean, all of them could get everything you can, right? And I mean, if it's a brand,
look, I don't.
Everyone could go to
Hermes.
Here's
the way I think of it: it's like
Hermes.
Like, I have this guy that I know, and he's a billionaire.
True.
He's a billionaire, and for him, it's not even about getting things anymore, it's not about branding or whatever. It's about getting the best thing that he wants. It's almost like purchasing things for him is a hobby. He wants to know about the leather, for example, he bought a Bentley the other day. And he says the leather, how the cows were raised, actually they're calves, and how they're taken care of to put it into his car. Where did the wood come from? Where was it from? When you have a limited amount of money, if you're a millionaire, which is kind of fucked up to say, if you have a limited amount of money, then it's about like the exclusivity brand. Because I think that if you're worried about brand and fashion, yes, you have it, but you're still stuck within a tribe. You're still restrained, and you still have to impress the people that you're around with and be likable to everybody. So you're still there. They still hold value for you. You know, you don't go too crazy within your tribe where you get out and everybody goes, oh, he's an outcast, get out of there. Even though you're a millionaire, so you kind of still okay, Louis Vuitton. But you know, maybe I might get an Hermes and I can afford it. But I'm still within that. But when you get stupid rich, then that's when it doesn't even matter anymore. that you start fantasizing and fetishizing about different things, and then, you know, it's not even about the brand. So I think that I still think that people are held within the brand because of social status.
Sure, sure. And well, I think this is a really interesting conversation, and it applies in a unique way in our place and time, being here in China, in Shanghai. For one thing, these luxury brands may be growing here and only here when they're not growing other places. And I think this has a lot to do with maybe Asian culture and Chinese culture, especially, of showing face.
Let's look at the different reasons why that it could be growing here. Okay, one is showing face, like you said. I think another reason is that they still think that the more you pay for something, the better quality it is.
Right, right. Okay, well, along with that idea, I think we have to right away talk about
Back to counterfeits.
New money.
This is a good point. I mean, you look at Russia when it first opened up, right? And it was, you know, I got to have McDonald's. And McDonald's is something that's, you know, everywhere in the States, everywhere in Canada. But, you know, there was lines out the door and it was super expensive, but people still did it. Mm. You know, they still did it for whatever reason.
Right.
I mean, there's other elements than just your tribe. And that's where new money comes in. As soon as you got money, you're out buying Louis Vuitton because why? Not because your friends have it, because no, your friends don't have it. You know, your friends don't have it.
Right.
But as soon as they're starting to make, you're doing the scramble for all these goods, all these luxury products as fast as you can.
That's right. When your friends become, my friends have Louis Vuitton. Now I need to get Hermes. Now I need to get the next most exclusive thing.
And you scramble up and you just kind of start scrambling up.
Hey, let's talk about this. You know, the concept and the idea, the character of Tu Hao. Uh-huh. You know, I think this is a really interesting thing about China right now. And you have this term in China called Tu Hao. And what does that mean? Who can explain it the best?
David?
I'll explain the best I can.
I don't know. I mean, it's new money, right?
Beverly Hillbillies. Beverly Hillbillies right there.
That's a good point.
No, okay. No.
But
no.
Yeah, Beverly Hillbillies have a lot of money.
Yeah. I don't know. It was about super wealthy hillbillies.
Yeah, that's country bumpkins down, who had money. That's what it is.
I'm gonna have to go one step further because it's a little different than that. Because in the Beverly Hillbillies, they had money, but they were still hillbillies living in a mansion. Okay, but it's like,
I think that's too hall.
But they still dress like hillbillies and everything. But that's different.
Too hall.
No. I think the best explanation is any rapper that. Is any rapper?
Yeah, close.
Because
yeah.
Okay, so here it is.
The same thing.
It's because they're from maybe say a different fuck it. They're from like a poor culture or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have a certain mentality. Yeah, they bring that mentality to in their spending habits with the money over, and they have the money and they keep the mentality. That I think that's Tu Hao.
The reason it's also not a perfect example because honestly, a lot of Tu Hao come from villages.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. Well, hip hop artists do not.
Actually, yeah. Well, Beverly Hillbillies. Like, the only thing I don't like about the Beverly Hillbillies is because they never spent the money. They never spent the money in the show. Like they had the mansion because somebody bought it for them, but they lived there and there are still hillbillies within the mansion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they never had like they never went bling bling actually, and blinged out.
Well,
like,
I mean that's
like it's like the Beverly Hillbillies. If they said I'm gonna go out and spend money and get themselves in Louis Vuitton and still be rednecks.
No. I mean, but that's kind of is correct because okay, yes, for sure the China Billies.
Nice.
They will, you know, start wearing a lot of Louis Vuitton stuff.
I think there's a new word, a China Billy.
And then they will, buy, whatever, expensive cars and all that. But for example, one guy I worked for was a total Tu Hao. No, I'm not, and again, he wasn't dumb. He just came into money, had a lot of money. And his family's from the village. And he was a nice guy. But, like, you go to his office and you saw all the electronics, three different iPhones, the Virtu, you know, the super expensive luxury phone, all kinds of laptops. Didn't use any of them. Just bought them because, I'm rich now. I'm buying stuff. Exactly. It's like, and that's maybe a little bit where it goes to the Beverly Hills hillbilly. I'm sure if you go to his house, he has all these new equipment, new washing machine. It's probably his mom doing the dishes.
You know, right.
It's probably exactly. Still his mom.
His mom's still doing the dishes you know. In the back, whatever. So, they have a couple chickens running around.
They have all these like massive, they might as well have chickens running through the mansion.
Yeah. For our modern American audience, this is Duck Dynasty, you know? It's Duck Dynasty kind of mentality. And exactly. And the common joke about Tu Hao is everyone has this, like, there's like this urban story about the lady who who's from the little village. They strike it rich in the coal business or whatever. They travel to Europe. She buys out the Hermes store or whatever luxury brand it is. And as she's walking out the door, she asks the lady, like, oh, by the way, what brand is this again?
Right.
You know, like, she doesn't really know. She just knows it's expensive. And I better buy it and bring it home to show off.
Well, what's a typical two-how that they look like?
Well, there's no typical two-how. It is kind of an insult. It's kind of a,
actually, people are kind of living it up now. I mean, they're two-how. Actually, in our reservation systems at work, you know, that's one of the comments. They say two-how.
Who says?
Yeah. We have visitors coming from the outer, fourth-tier cities who book reservations. Uh-huh. And they come in looking like they just fell off the turnip truck. And they say, book me the big room. I'm gonna spend a lot of money. I'm a two-hall.
Well, we have a class. Okay, on our reservation system is we have a classification system. If they're maybe foreign, if they have money, what they drink, if they're Chinese, if they're well dressed, sure. If but they're fuar dai.
That is your biases and your racism.
No, I mean it's a pretty classification. If you're black, if you're white, if you're fuar dai, if you're two-hall, you're two-hall.
No, but that, I mean,
but we
no firm.
We've had
no.
If you're clients,
too hao, you know you're.
We've
too
had
hao.
Clients come in tell us.
Yes,
I am too hao.
Yes,
book for me.
But that's different. That's different. That's different from you saying, what's your ethnicity too hao. So actually, a good example I think we're all skipping over is the too hao jin, the iPhone. The golden iPhone.
Oh, yes.
When that came out, oh, my God.
Yes.
The gold iPhone was made for the China
market.
Oh,
my God. It had to
be.
That
was it.
I mean, that was brilliant. Everybody was getting it. But now the joke in China was it's too hao jin. It's like hillbilly gold.
Well, I think that comes from more for like an actual too hao would take the phone and play it in gold because he could.
Yeah.
That is too hao.
No, but okay. But that being said, I would say the vast majority of the people I know who are wealthy, guess the color of their phone.
Too hao.
It's too hao jin. It's hillbilly gold.
Okay, wait. And,
they know it. And they joke about it, too.
We have to bring this up. What is the too hao phone?
Must be the Virtu. I think I'm pronouncing it. Virtu. No, it's an English phone, right? It's a Virtu.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Virtu.
I don't care. But I think it's the stupidest thing ever.
Stupidest thing ever.
Why is it
stupidest thing ever?
Because it is
outdated
useless.
Technology that's
it's
extreme
amounts
of money.
I'm guaranteed this is one of those things.
There must be a lesson in here somewhere,
this
right?
This is one of those exclusive things that most people out there have no idea what this phone is. So let's tell people what it is.
I think everybody knows this retarded shit.
Yeah,
We know.
Are you serious?
If you describe to people, okay, it's an Android phone. Before it wasn't even Android.
What is it? The Sabian was Nokia?
It was just horrible. It looked like, and it was basically a Nokia phone. But what was special about it?
It had a sapphire screen and hand-assembled and baby cow leather or wrapped in it.
And some gems for buttons or something like
that's
that.
Some stupid
and it could
shit.
Not, like, beyond text message, it probably could not do anything.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
And but what do these things cost?
Entry price is about $10,000.
I think so. That's
$10,000 for a Nokia made out of silver.
Yes.
This is goes back to the thing about, you know, what is luxury goods? Because sometimes it's not about the luxury. Sometimes it's just exclusive. You know, in nature, there's like an equivalent for this in evolution in nature. You know, there's these monkeys that have bright orange asses, or like peacocks that have huge plumes of ridiculously colorful feathers.
Right.
Okay,
they do that for pussy.
Exactly.
That's a good point, Wally.
And this is that not only does it take a lot of genetic, what do you say,
makeup? No, genetic.
Wally, spit a lot it of out. Wally,
energy.
What are you trying to say?
It takes a lot of energy to grow a big orange ass. It takes a lot of energy and genetic energy to grow a big plume of ridiculously bright feathers. Not only that, it puts you at risk because it doesn't help you hide from predators. In fact, it makes you more at risk to be seen by predators. But it's to show the opposite sex that I am so strong, I'm so powerful, yeah. I can show my bright orange ass, I can show my bright feathers, and I can still survive. So that there's this way of showing off, even in nature, has a benefit for mating and reproduction. Okay. Hey, back to managing expectations, okay? I heard a perfect example of this today. Even monkeys abide by this type of logic, okay? I can't take credit for it, but in the...
Be a white male. Yeah, take credit for it. Be a white male.
Okay. So basically, they did this experiment with monkeys where they were teaching monkeys about money, where monkeys would get coins and they would trade them in for grapes. There was two different people selling grapes to monkeys. One seller would hold one grape, and when the monkey would give them a coin, they would give them two grapes. The other seller would hold three grapes, and when the monkey would give them a coin, they would take away one grape and give them two grapes. Okay, so both people ultimately are giving the monkeys two grapes. Who did the monkeys gravitate towards? The monkeys would always gravitate towards the seller who would hold one grape and give an extra grape. They would avoid the seller that would hold three grapes and only give two grapes. Even though the ultimate takeaway was only two grapes, no matter who they go to, it was based on the monkey's expectation. So, again, back to the importance of managing expectations. It is a hardwired thing built into us.
That's good.
All right. Well, I told you I'll be back. The study that Wally is talking about right now is a study by Yale University Professor Lori Santos. It was first made popular in the book Freakonomics. However, the research goes farther than that. And the research could actually touch on both topics that we were talking about today. The first topic we're talking about today is what makes something valuable to people, and usually it is the expense or how much something costs. So the research that Lori Santos was doing actually touched on this subject. So the monkeys, as Wally was saying, can buy grapes or raisins or nuts or whatever with the coins that they were given. Some maybe cost more than the others. Maybe grapes were one coin, raisins were two coins, and the nuts were eight coins. So they want to understand if maybe the monkeys had the same idea of, hey, if it's more valuable, it must be better. Because for us, if something is more expensive, we tend to think that something is actually better. For example, lobster. Lobster back in the day, I don't know how long ago, maybe 100 years ago or whatever, it was considered, as a podcast I'm listening to right now calls it, the spam of the sea. The podcast is You Are Not So Smart. All of a sudden, it became popular and expensive. And now if you go to a buffet and they give you a choice of steak, lobster, macaroni and cheese, peanut butter jelly sandwich, and a bowl of Cheerios, you're probably going to go, and everybody's probably going to go for the steak and lobster. I'm personally not a lobster fan. I don't like lobster. I would probably like to eat Cheerios over lobster just because I just don't like lobster. However, I might even just go get the lobster instead, because why would I want to get a bowl of Cheerios when I can get a lobster? The same thing was done with the monkeys. So they were buying the grapes, the raisins, and the peanuts, let's say, for different prices. And Lori Santos said, okay, let's see if they go for the things that are more expensive. So we're going to do a all-you-can-eat free buffet. So they put out their raisins, their nuts, their grapes, and they said, okay, if they were like humans, and they used the same bias as humans, they would go for the things that were more expensive. They would go for the nuts that were eight or whatever. But what she found in her research was that they went for whatever. They went for the things that they actually liked. So they, if the monkey liked nuts, he would eat the nuts. If he preferred grapes, the monkey would pick the grapes. Not as humans would do. As Lori said in her interview the other day on the podcast I mentioned, even I go to the grocery store or a mall and pick up an expensive piece of chocolate that I'm overpaying for, and I think it's the most amazing chocolate, but is it really the most amazing chocolate? Maybe it's just because it's expensive. If you see somebody drinking an expensive bottle of wine, $200, $300, $400 bottle of wine, and you're drinking the $40 bottle of wine, the taste could be exactly the same. Or actually, the $40 bottle of wine actually could taste a lot better than the $400 bottle of wine. But you're already looking at that $400 bottle of wine going, I bet you that stuff's amazing. So you can see that there's this relationship between us as humans thinking something is pricey and expensive as being good, good tasting, good quality, or better than the other things that aren't as expensive is innately human. So I guess everybody should just go out and get a Vertu phone.
Manage expectations. When you're going to work and you're late, you call, you say, hey, I'm going to be late today. Way better than showing up late.
Yeah.
Right? If they know, expect you're going to be late. I mean, it's some basic things, right?
Yeah. Work relationships, customer, worker, business relationships, love relationships. I think this is a big thing. I don't know. I've this kind of was introduced to me maybe a couple years back, and I've been, you know, playing with it and working with it in all different arenas. Dude, I think it's a big thing. I mean, it's just one of those things that if you kind of keep in mind throughout different facets of life, very helpful. Basic rule, under promise, over serve.
You know, why don't you touch on a little bit of with the shoes and people coming back?
Oh, yeah.
You told me the dress code. You know what? And this goes back to actually our employees and also our clients, you know? If we establish a set dress code ahead of time for employees and for clients, and they come, and if they're not up to dress code, we ask them to leave, go change, come back, there's an understanding, and people can accept it. If there's not an established expectation, a clearly written, clearly spoken expectation among, be it staff or clients, if they come in and they're surprised at the last minute, I came all the way down here.
Yeah, I didn't expect
this. You know, I didn't expect that I have to have reservations. I didn't know I have to dress a certain way. People are upset. They're pissed. They're arguing. You know, they're screaming at you. You know, we have to escort people out with security because of their expectations weren't managed. You know, they came down. They expect to get in. They're expecting a great night. They're expecting to come into work and do their job. And when the expectation wasn't managed, the ultimate result is the same. People have to come in looking, representing themselves in the best way, up to the standards of the nightclub, up to the standards of the establishment. If people understand it, you know, they'll live up to it. If they're denied access, they understand why ahead of time, they can deal with it.
That's actually kind of brilliant.
So Wally and I were in a meeting at the office, and we're talking to our employees, and we were talking about their expense accounts. We are very liberal, and we give everybody an expense account where they can buy, you know, drinks for people and bottles or whatever. They have, you know, X amount of dollars that they can spend anywhere. Well, you know, I had to tighten down on their expense account. It's that it was based on a model that didn't represent our business anymore.
Okay.
And so now that our business changed, or the expectations of the business weren't being met or were being met, we had to increase or decrease other people's expenses accounts based off of their performances.
So is the expense account then a reward?
That's the exact problem we're having now. We're saying meeting expectations. I didn't manage the expectations of the staff properly because I gave them a big expense account, most of them, beforehand, before I understood how they can help the business you know, improved in the future, and how much business they can bring in, if they can bring in money, if they can't bring in money, or the job that they did. What I found out is, you know, probably 50% are just, you know, using it to get drunk with their friends, mm-hmm. or, you know, do their own little side deals, and the other ones are actually bringing in business. So I had to, you know, make it a, you know, a more manageable system that is just reflected off their business.
Yeah.
The long story short
you can make a serious side business with that, can't you?
You could.
I mean, you could just be like, okay, pay me money and I'll give you bottles and
for half price.
Half the price. You start your own mini bar within a bar.
Exactly. Well, you know, that has happened.
For sure.
Regardless, is that, you know, I didn't manage the expectations properly because they now take it for granted that they can do this. Mm-hmm. They have this amount. They have, you know, $2,000 to spend on whatever they want, or $4,000 to spend on whatever they want, you know, in the club, and they can just sign it off. And now that I reduced it, people are pissed off. And sure. They feel that's my right. That's my right as this position, as my job. And actually, it isn't. Yeah. It was a privilege of your mm-hmm. job. And the same thing, like with Wally was saying, when you let people in that have, you know, not the right dress code or not the right fitting into your brand image, then, you know, and they do it for a couple of times, then, you know, it is their right. They feel that, hey, well, I came in last time with, you know, a hoodie on. Why can't I do it now?
Someone who deals directly with this kind of situation, I can tell you from multiple experiences. If you're dealing with someone the first time and you tell them we have a strict dress code at our establishment, I invite you to change and come back again. If that's the first time they hear that, most people can take it. The time when you really get argument is from people who said, hey, but I came here last week and I didn't have reservations and I dressed just the same and I didn't have any problem. And now I'm really pissed because you're not letting me back in this time. You know, yeah, now you're selecting sure. me out. You're not being fair. It sets off an alarm in people, and that's when you get big friction, you know?
I think we're done for today.
So guys, real quick, you know, let's wrap it up.
So about that restaurant.
The restaurant. We gotta get a little bump. Go eat there. It's cool. You know, if you're used to eating.
We give a lot of bumps. The only place that we didn't give a bump to is Cyclo, yeah?
Cyclo sucked.
It was horrible. You know,
did we
went
give
to
a bump yet? I don't think we gave a bump yet. I want to give these guys a bump.
Who, Cyclo?
No, this place we went to.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's so, okay. No, Cyclo sucked. We went to whatchamacallit, a Vietnamese place today over at Mei Lo Chang.
No bump.
In Su Jia Hui.
It was great.
It was amazing.
Cyclo, no bump.
No bump.
Okay, that's why I want to give a bump to this place. It's kind of a place that probably a lot of foreigners don't know about this place. It's a little.
But you'll like it. You'll like it.
A hidden gem, a little niche place. If you're a foreigner, you find out about this place, you're going to impress your local friends. You're going to impress your foreign friends just by knowing about it.
Yep. Yeah, for 100%. And you could bring a date there, and it's comfortable. It's not like, and we're not talking about a hole in the wall that's like, you know, cold and dirty, and they have cocktails. You could do whatever you want.
Definitely
and
casual, but very nicely done.
Yeah.
Toilet is not stunning, so go before you.
Toilet's okay. It was fine.
Go before you go.
It was totally fine. It was clean. It was fine.
You'll be fine if you're a dude. Tell your date to use the toilet before you go.
Yes, that's what you do before a date all the time. Be like, girl, did you use the bathroom yet?
Yep.
Oh, wait, they have the best locking mechanism there, remember?
Yeah, you did. What was it? Tell
it
me
was like a moat.
You feel like you're in a shit fortress.
Yes.
No, when you lock that door with a...
It's a sliding door with a 2x4 that swings over to hit the other...
A 2x4 that bolts shut like a castle door.
Yes.
It's exactly
boom. Boom.
It is a shit fortress.
Dude, you can spray away in there undisturbed. No one's getting in there.
Nope.
So I want to give it a good grade. I mean, I looked behind the bar. The kitchen was clean, actually. If you walked by and you looked at the kitchen, it was clean. That's very important. The bar wasn't super clean. They just kind of let it go a little bit. But I would still give it a 7 out of 10. Maybe an 8 even.
Atmosphere?
Huh?
Atmosphere was a 7?
Atmosphere, I would give an atmosphere an 8.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was, for what it was, is exactly what I want. I don't want to eat, you know, like you could finish your good Chinese food, have a drink, and hang out and be comfortable.
Yeah.
You're not
warm,
you don't
and
feel
cozy.
Like uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're right.
Chairs,
but I wouldn't give it an 8. I would give it a 6.5.
You know, we went there. I got to put context. We went there on a cold winter day. The first really cold day
it was
out there.
The first one. Yeah, and it was warm.
And we went inside. You feel like you're at home. And
it's
I even
nice.
Think it's the guy and his mom who are working there, and it feels like you're getting home cooking.
Look,
it's cozy, warm.
Look, for an 8 for me, I mean, you're going to have to have like a clean bathroom and all that shit going on.
It was clean. It wasn't dirty.
Oh, it was dirty.
It wasn't dirty.
It was
just
dirty.
Not good. It wasn't clean.
I'm the bathroom review expert.
Okay,
yes.
Fine.
We have pictures. It was not clean.
Fair enough.
Bathroom was not clean.
It was a 6.5, 7 because it was maybe warm. I like that shit.
It was warm.
Six and a half.
I'm gonna do 7.5 with the asterisk. The asterisk is this: it wasn't fancy by any means, but for me, that's kind of a good thing. I see too many places in China, in Shanghai especially, it's all glitz and glam and beautiful hardware, and the service and the food is terrible.
Yep.
This place was exactly the opposite. It underpromised with the comfortable, cozy, unassuming environment and decor, and the food and service was welcoming. Hospitality was great. All in all, I was very impressed. I got to give it a bump. I'll definitely go back.
I'm actually going 6.5 down the board. 6.5 for food, 6.5 for atmosphere. And
sure. Fair enough. I mean, look, it's not a fancy
overall. Overall, 6.5.
That's okay. That's good. So,
would I go back? Yes.
Sure. So it's Fan Xiao Guan. So 279 on Xizang South Road. So you could look it up.
Go there. Tell them you heard about them in our podcast.
Done.
We'll see.
All right, cool.
All right.
Boom.
Jeffrey out.
See y'all next week.
China. Boo, 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 MSG.